Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello, welcome back to another episode. As you can see from the title, we've got Ava Lloyd coming up later on in the episode as she approaches World Juniors in Peru. But first, mate, a few Diamond Leagues to get stuck into.
Yeah, man, first one post-games. And my biggest takeaway straight away, I'm just going to go out there and say it. I personally think the only man capable of breaking the 1500 world record in the near future is Jakob Ingebrigtsen. That might sound dumb, because obviously, you know, he hasn't won a championship 1500 in a little while now, but he's just shown again, like from this Diamond League, it was just clear to me that he's the only man capable of actually taking a race on and pushing the pace in the third lap. And I look at people like Hocker and even Kerr to an extent, I mean, Neguse as well, like these guys, like, yes, they can front run at a slightly slower speed, at kind of like a 3:30 and 3:31 and maybe kick off of that. But I don't think they've got it in them to like 150 through 800 and maintain. And you know, Jakob's on, everyone's emotionally drained post-Olympics. Jakob still goes and runs 3:27. And yeah, he's just the best guy in a paced race, full stop. But every single world record the athlete is required to do, whether it be the last 500, 600 of a 1500, you know, in 5000, you've got to do that last couple Ks on your own and so on. And every world record that you've seen, the athletes have just been able to push and push and push completely solo. And I just think the only man, if we are going to see a world record in this era, the only man I think that might come from is Jakob. I might eat my own words. People like Hocker and Kerr might just improve tremendously and have the ability to do it. But this year, going into next year, and what we keep forgetting is Jakob's still only, what, is he 23 years of age or something? So he's still, you know, the record could come from this guy when he's like 24, 25 in the next couple of years. So, but that was my biggest takeaway. Obviously, you know, Kessler, Hocker and the rest of the field, I mean, Hocker and Kessler still ran pretty well, I think, but obviously just didn't quite have that same energy that we saw from them at the Olympic Games. And in the rest of the field, it just showed, man, they struggled. You know, the pace early was hot. Everyone kind of goes with it on the rail. And then, yeah, you can just see those guys who just, it was like, you know, people like McSwain and Hoare and stuff, like just, yeah, struggling to really hold it, and I guess showing where they are kind of post-Olympics and the kind of effects of the Olympics. And that's what's so impressive about Jakob, because we'll get on to the men's 800 as well, because that was ridiculous. But I think his ability to just go and go and go, and he's bloody lined up for the 3000 on Sunday night, today when you're listening, people.
Yeah, I think you're bang on about a world record, mate, and I also think it puts Hisham's record in perspective. The fact he's done that, and they're still not touching it with the amount of
tech,
depth,
support,
tech, the amount of races that are basically set up to run that. Like back in the day, you weren't getting opportunities like that to run sub 3:30 just week in, week out, essentially. Like you did really have to go out on your own. Whereas, obviously Jakob's going out on his own, but he does know he's got a whole host of guys who can run under 3:30 in the race.
Without a doubt,
So
we didn't, like, back in the day as well, like, watching a lot of races. I'm only going off of, like, races I've watched on YouTube of, like, past world records and stuff in the 1500. Obviously, I wasn't alive to follow the sport that in detail then, when people like Cram and Cover breaking records. But, like, it was rare these guys would get a pacemaker to 1,000 metres or even kind of, you know, 1,100 metres, that sort of thing. It was so rare that that would happen. But that seems to be becoming more and more and more common. So they're getting, like you said, way more support. They've got the lights as well to make those kind of first few laps very, very even. It does put into perspective how good that record is, and whether we'll see this era break it, I don't know.
Yeah, I think even if we do see it go, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a better performance. I think in the past few years we've realised that about most of our world records, haven't we?
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, and I think, I mean, you were saying, you know, like the way Jakob's still kind of like, you know, he wins Diamond League again and he's kind of like, you know, got a bit of swagger again. He was making a few remarks about, yeah, good quote that he made after this one. I don't know if, you know, people saw it, but basically saying, like, if you can't run for three and a half minutes and then 2 weeks later come and do it again, you've got a big problem. Almost like disregarding the fact that people are fatigued and emotionally drained after the Olympics and they're tired and stuff. But, you know, mentally, he's one of a kind, the way that he can just carry his momentum through.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I used to think, yeah, Jakob was mentally ridiculous. But actually now I've decided, I think it's a bit of a front, to be honest. Because, I don't know, some of those comments, like, mate, you should have just done the job a few weeks ago. You would not feel like you need to say these things, to be honest. It's all well and good, but I actually think the best thing that could happen to him is if he'd come out and actually lost, and then he might actually take stock and think, okay, yeah, maybe I'm not the best in pace races, like, I'm not unbeatable in them, and look, I've lost the Olympics as well, maybe I need to start doing something about it, to be honest. Because
yeah, you think the whole time he's winning and beating these guys on the circuit.
It just papers over his cracks that he clearly has in championship races. It's not happened just once. It's three times on the bounce now.
Yeah. It's intriguing. A few people, I guess, that was the men's 1500, really. It was the Jakob show. We're going to get that great 1500 to come in Zurich early September, where we're going to see Neguse, Hocker and Jakob and Kerr go at it. I wouldn't mind betting someone drops out of the race. Maybe not, actually. There's too much money on the line. But talking of kind of news, obviously Keely's called her season. Claims she's got a bit of an injury. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe she does. But also, I think there is, when you're in her position, I think you've just got so much to lose at this stage in the season. I think a lot of athletes, they've got so much to gain because there's just so much financial reward on the line. So every time you toe the line, your race fees are probably double. You know, your appearance fees are probably double. But I think Keely, commercially, will just sweep up way more cash.
Yeah.
Between now and the end of the season. And if she was continuing the rest of the season, I think she would have to turn down so many kind of like commercial deals and all this stuff she's about to get invited to that we don't even know, because it's probably so exclusive, premieres and all this kind of stuff. Dude, she's just going to absolutely make way more than she would on the track. But look, I'm not saying she's not injured. She probably is injured, but, you know, is it something that, because earlier there were rumors of like her kind of trying to chase the world record before the season's out and stuff. So, you know, is it kind of more they don't want to take risks, and, you know, there's a lot to lose at this stage. And I think there's a lot to lose financially, but also going into next year. If you go into next year beat up, banged up in October, how's that going to kind of affect momentum?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, she might, like, yeah, if she hadn't just won the Olympics, it could be an injury that, yeah, you probably could race through or kind of patch yourself up. But look, if she's got any sort of niggle, there's no need to be doing anything at all. So yeah, I think good decision, to be honest, whether she is or she isn't, because yeah, nothing to race for her. And also I think the, particularly with the expectation she had, from, I guess, not just athletics fans, but in general, when people started realizing, GB and the athletics have a real kind of gold medal contender in Keely Hodgkinson, that kind of emotional pressure to get the job done, and I know we all expected her to do it, but sometimes I'm sure that's worse for these athletes, you know.
I just feel
you're number one,
100%. You've got to be able to enjoy the moment though as well. And you know, we've always said, haven't we, how athletes, I mean, look, it's their job, right, to kind of toe the line, and this is kind of a period where they cash in, but how they do continue their season after such an achievement, like, for me, the motivation would just never be there. So, you've got to be able to enjoy it. Like, it may never happen again. You know, in 4 years' time, like, I know we said a few weeks ago that I think it is going to be the Keely show. It's going to be Keely Zero for the next 3-4 years, maybe, until someone comes along that can challenge her, you know, providing she stays healthy. So she might win again, but it's very unlikely that you're going to get two Olympic golds 4 years apart. So
yeah, and 3 medals in 3 games.
Crap, yeah, even
would be crazy.
Silver, gold, and yeah.
Well, look at all the people. Look at all the favourites. I say favourites. Look at all the people, like who 3 years ago you thought were probably locks, right? Like I think about someone like Warholm, for example, in the 4 hurdles.
Yeah.
How he went from dominating, being unbeatable.
Yeah.
And then biggest stage on earth. He's just not quite there, like, and it's how quickly that can happen. So,
yeah, literally very, very few athletes capable of doing that. But I guess that's Keely, and Neil Gawley's got an injury, and interestingly, you know, Neil Gawley, by the way, if people follow him on Instagram, you probably all do, but yeah, came out and apparently did a 143.9 time trial, by the way, in Chiavenna. Pre-Olympic Games. I think he was looking forward to lining up in that 800, and it was electric. We'll get onto that, the one in Lausanne the other night. But yeah, he's decided to call his season as well. He's got a little calf strain. And I think, again, for someone who's missed quite a few winters in his career, he's very concerned about kind of getting... We said before, anyway, he's got to get a full winter in him to see what can this guy do. Can he be a 327, 328 guy? We've always kind of thought he could, right? But he's just never been... kind of had that perfect preparation, if there's such thing. But mate, let's the men's 1500. Yeah, we just kind of dissected a little bit.
Men's 8.
Let's do it, man. Wow.
Yeah, obviously Wanyonyi taking the win, 141-1. We're getting close, mate. And I did not think we would be saying that at the start of this season. The 800 is, on the men's side, anyways, is an event that we have seen. Not a lack of like talented athletes, but just a lack of fast races in the past few years. I think we've had good athletes. Look, they're all the same ones that kind of have been on the circuit for the last few years or so. But yeah, since it was that one race, was it Paris? The Paris Diamond League was the first one, I believe. Yeah, Paris, then Monaco, then obviously the Paris Olympics, and now in Lausanne as well. They are just every time they're going out and getting after it. And I think it is just. They've just realised, okay, now that's the standard, and they've all been like, okay, we'll just run fast. Do you think we will see a world record soon? And will it be Wanyonyi, or the thing is, so many others are also so close that actually it's not like we've got one guy.
No, the others
ripping it up.
For me, there's two guys. Honestly, I just think it's Wanyonyi or A-Rob. They're the only two. They look like the only two who can actually run. Who can run a 49 through that first lap, 49 low, in a relaxed manner. Everyone else is just kind of like, they wouldn't be able to hit the front and to go through in 49 behind the pacemaker and kind of continue to build. I looked at Wanyonyi's splits, by the way. I think it was his, from 500 to 600, 100 split was one of his fastest of the whole race. Can't remember exactly what it is, but I think it was a low 12. Outrageous, bar the kind of first 100 or... I just don't see anyone else actually being able to run that fast, being up at the front, competing for the win. I think they can get dragged round, hence why they're running so fast. But it's like in the 1500, you know, that they just can't make that next step. So the world record is definitely coming from one of those two, I think. Even Sijati, I'm not sure he's got it in his locker, wherever he may be. But A-Rob, man, like, what was he... Honestly, I think it looked like they had some sort of arrangement when A-Rob just drifted out down the back straight. He let Wanyonyi come through on the inside and then just kind of slotted in behind him. It was so weird. And then continued to challenge him down the home straight. it was one of the craziest 800s that I've seen in a long, long time. But Wanyonyi, the only thing I think, like, I think there's faster tracks out there than Lausanne, to be honest. I think there's probably, you know, maybe better conditions, I don't know. But the only thing, I think he did have a beautifully set up race. Like, Pacer, A-Rop, came through on the inside, battled down the home straight, you know, had a little battle with A-Rop. So it was almost, yeah, it was inch perfect. And what did Radicea do when he first, I think Radicea ran 141.09 in Berlin when he first broke the world record, and then 140.91. So
yeah,
we are getting stupidly, stupidly close, ladies and gentlemen. Whether we'll see it at the end of the season, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the splits as well, and Wanyonyi actually went 50.0 on the first lap.
Yeah,
like his split. And I actually think that's a really, really sensible way to do it, to be honest. So if he can just, I don't think he needs to run 49 low. I think he just needs to run like 49.8, 49.7.
Yep.
And that actually puts you in a better position, to be honest. But yeah, because Radicea was not that quick through 400, considering the obviously the 140 back when he did it.
Yeah, so. Radicea was 49 point, right? But yeah, there you go. 12.4. His 100 from 500 to 600 was the fastest of the race bar the back straight on the first lap as well. So showing that kind of, I remember Radicea did the same, that third 200 down the back straight, just got another gear. The only thing I would say about the eight, like, these guys have maintained that form now, just pre-Olympics, through the Olympics, and now to Lausanne. Surely at some point that strength, because they've been racing so much, they surely haven't been able to do quite as much training, surely that will start to dip away. Be some feat if, come the end of the season, your end of an Olympic season, they run a world record. That would just be so. That's my only kind of reservations, like whether they'll get the job done this year.
Yeah, you think it'd be hard, wouldn't you? But this year, who knows, mate? Who knows?
Then women's eight, Georgia Bell continued to impress on tired legs. I mean, I thought she could have challenged for the win, to be fair. She looked in a great spot, just kind of then just sort of at the 600 meter mark, positioning was pretty rough, let a few people go by, but then, you know, her strength in the last 50 is just second to none.
Yeah, do you think it's almost a case of, like, just being, not that she's not used to winning, but not used to winning on this level, that she's almost just not quite putting herself in the position, not quite to
brave enough for, I think the 800, you know, 800 is definitely a tricky one, because I mean, the 1500s that she's run, like, since, let's say, British champs, like, she's a great tactical 1500 runner, but, you know, there hasn't been much tactics involved. It's just hang on.
Yeah.
And obviously this 800, there was a little bit more. I think she could have paid, at that 600 meter mark, she could have paid a lot closer order to Mary Moore. Like, I think she could have challenged for the win. But she was tired and whatnot, post Olympics, we understand that. But yeah, I think she wants to do the Diamond League final in the 800, so I think we're going to see more of her, and yeah, I think she can run a 155. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, no Keeley as well. Maybe she's thinking that's the title she can actually come away with, the Diamond League victory, you know?
Yeah, and
versus the 15, for example.
We know what that means. We know that means you get a bypass to Tokyo.
Does she double in Tokyo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that would be a story.
She's bloody capable of it, to be honest.
I'd love to see Keeley do the same as well, to be honest. That's my kind of, I know she's kind of opting for the fours, but I think that's one of the things that, if you could kind of ask for things in the sport as a spectator, I'd love
that's
to see
one.
Keeley line up in a 15.
Mm. Yeah, her 1500 meter abilities will continue to be debated. And yeah, no, obviously Riki ran pretty strong for third, and yeah, it's kind of more like the Riki we're used to seeing, to be fair. And then the only other race, really, Women's 3000, Reve ran 8:44 PB, so that was pretty strong. But yeah, I think, obviously, as well, like, we've got the Silesia Diamond League in Poland kicking off today, when you're listening. And it's weird, isn't it? We're just getting reruns of the Olympics, and you look at the lineups, they're absolutely stacked. It's basically just Olympic finals. The men's 3000 looks to be absolutely stellar. Mohamed Aragari, Fisher, Ingebrigtsen, Kjelca's in there, Ronald Quemoy as well, McSwain Mills. It's great. McSwain and Mills must be absolutely knackered, but those two are just gonna run themselves into the ground, aren't they? And then the men's 800 as well. It's just another rerun of that final. A-Rop, this is where the world record might come. Celestia is notoriously a quick track. Wanyonyi, Tuau, Hoppel, Crestan, Bergen's in there, so it'll be interesting to see what he does. Atui, like, just stacked once again. So be interested to see what happens in these Diamond Leagues now. Will people start slowing down, or will they just continue to kind of get quicker and build on that Olympic form? So it's a short preview there. Bell and Courtney Bryant and Reve are going to go into women's 1500 as well, but we won't talk about it too much because it probably happened by the time most of you are listening.
Yeah, and then obviously next weekend is into Rome.
At the start of this out.
So I'm just having a look now, mate. See if we can get on some of these. Yeah, we got 3K, Amy Pratt's in the 3K on the women's side, obviously. Who's in it? Men's 5, Mohamed, Aragawi, Barega, Fisher, Gebruet. Wow. Nick Griggs is in there. Wow, that'll be an exciting one.
Man, that is a baptism of fire.
Because Jesus, look at these. Christ. Obviously, we know how good Nick Griggs is, but his PB of 13:13 is only him.
Oh my
and
God.
Two Kenyans who've run outside 13 minutes.
And
so
Mike Foppen, but yeah,
Edwin Kerger and Ronald Quemoy both outside 13 minutes as well. But yeah, we know from those guys, particularly Quemoy, that they can go a lot quicker.
Whoa, mate, they are. This is good. This is good from Diamond League. They're announcing Battaglietti's going to go into 1500. Yegon's going to go into 1500 in Rome as well. Could we see another world record there? Jess Holt won't be running. As Jess Holt said, she's ending her season or something because she doesn't seem to be lining up on too many start lists. So maybe. But really, Rome is a women's steeple, but men's 5, women's 15, and that's all there is from kind of distance angle. So a little bit underwhelming for us because it's a fast track. It's a great meet. Weather's good. So
yeah, I was literally thinking, what am I doing next weekend? I might see if I can get myself a...
Get yourself over there.
To Rome, you know. maybe. But yeah, it's good, isn't it, mate? Like, a few races, like, we're getting some good start. Like you say, the Diamond League are really cashing in, making sure they get the big names.
Oh, yeah.
Post-Olympics. And that's all we can ask for, really, like, regardless of whether it matters in relation to the big one or not.
Well, you know, it's good entertainment, but this is going to be the last year, I think, that this is going to happen, isn't it? They really want to make sure that... Well, I think Worlds will always be at the end of the season going forward. Mm-hmm. Whether the Olympics will, because obviously multi-sports, I'm not so sure. I don't know what the dates are for LA, but, you know, Worlds next year, that'll be it. Done.
Yeah,
and we've always said I think that is how it should be. You know, it does feel, even these Diamond Leagues, it's a little bit Community Shield vibes, isn't it? It's like,
it is, mate.
Club
it
World
is.
Cup sort of stuff. Mate, I guess just a little bit more news. New York City Marathon announced their fields. crazy stack. I mean, Tola, Olympic champs lining up, Bashir Abdi is lining up there. It's half expecting the Mill to be on this start list as well, because it seems like everyone who did the Olympic Marathon is pretty much lining up as well. You've got Kamwar and Chebet and people in there as well. Conor Mantz, Clayton Young are both doing it. Those two, I think they're cashing in on some serious money, to be honest with you. Because, that's a tight turnaround.
It is, mate. And this is one that, look, as an athlete, I'm like...
You have to cash in.
Completely get it, but surely... Surely the organisers, right, and everyone almost knows that this is a bit of just a procession, you know?
I think as an athlete, it's almost worth doing, because then I think 2025, we know no one really takes the World Championship Marathon seriously. For a marathon runner, it's almost like, okay, that's the year you can probably take a bit of an off year and take stock and really recover. And then sort of start to build and look to sort of look ahead, getting Mantz, Clayton Young, like, start trying to attack the American record and obviously get your qualifying marks, Olympics, etc. But I almost feel like, if you can cash in, it's probably good to do now. and then you can almost take like a full year off from marathon running and from a build and stuff. But it is brutal because they've obviously had their American trials, they've done the Olympics, and then they're doing New York, three marathons in 12 months. I've said before, I think the shoes are allowing people to have to just get a little bit greedy when it comes to the marathon. Yeah. And I don't know, yeah, I don't know what effect, you know, whether that has much of a positive effect or a negative effect, but from what I've seen, it, you then just cram in a 3-4 year cycle, you've crammed in 10 marathons as opposed to kind of like what,
four to six.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the, it's the nature of all sports, right? Like we were just speaking.
Yeah,
about,
but I think your
community shield, weren't we? And
I think your longevity's yeah. your longevity's less than like yeah. the times that you continue to churn out. I mean, honestly, like even when you look at like a pro, like they have maybe have like 3 or 4 really good marathons in them, and they've, you know, after that, out of 10 marathons over like a 4-5 year period. Yeah. Yeah, 3 or 4 are really good, and the others are kind of, they struggle in the build up. There's always, you know, there's always problems. And that's why Kipchoge was able to stay so good for so long. He never ever did kind of more than 2.
No, and he did not like differ from that build up plan, which obviously I guess now people might say it's not working, but look, it wasn't ever gonna kind of last forever, and that is what that sorry is what's allowed him to be so consistent. Mate, I'm just looking at in terms of kind of road races, looking at these Antrim start lists for the half as well, and some interesting names on here, like Mark Scott's pacing.
Oh, it's stacked.
Derry Griffiths is in there, like good to see him back. Ryan Gregson's going, the Aussie.
Just keep an eye on the results, ladies and gents. I think they've got 4 or 5 sub 60 lined up on the men's side, and yeah, women's side as well is ridiculously stacked. So yeah, just that would have happened this morning, so just keep an eye on those results. We'll try and keep you posted in our results roundup as well.
Yeah, mate.
But interesting course, because it's on the seafront, right? And I've always thought, like, oh, Alex, really blustery. It doesn't look good. But I think because the way the cliffs are situated, right? If the wind comes in from the west, apparently, athletes are sheltered on that kind of, you know, against the cliffs, and they run real right up close. So I think that's why it's able to be such a fast course. But on paper, when you look at it, you're like, how the hell is this ever fast?
Yeah.
But yeah, they do continue to deliver kind of time and time again in Antrim.
Yeah, that's it. I think if you catch a good day, then you are absolutely flying on that course, aren't uh-huh. you? Obviously, yeah, just Jeb Kosko on there on the women's side. Obviously, 2:16. Marathoner as well, so they do manage to attract kind of your world elite, not just kind of.
Oh, they've changed the game considering this. That half started in pretty sure the first one they did was COVID, or just after COVID. Maybe they had it before, but that was the first kind of big one where they seemed to have elites. I mean, since then it has, you know, it is electric, and it does have strong lineups every year. So credit to those guys. Yeah, and then I guess women's New York City Marathon. Tirunesh DeBarber. Hello, Beery goes again. Whole host of Americans, as you'd expect, even the ones who kind of went to the Olympics. And Lily Partridge is doing it from a British angle as well. So Callum Hawkins also doing it for on the men's side, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. So, mate, that's I think that's pretty much it for this week. Let's get stuck into this. Bit of news. Ben Reynolds off to Virginia Tech to be reunited with
Ben Thomas. Yeah, absolutely, mate. And obviously, look, a name many of you might not know, I guess he's been around on the BMC circuit a fair bit this year. He has been on the podcast before when he was studying at the University of Oregon, but has been...
Also under Ben Thomas there.
Yeah, and obviously kind of came back when they switched to Jerry Schumacher, came back to the UK. He's been training with James Thee for a year or so, and he's gone back out there to be kind of, yeah, like you say, mate, go back to Ben Thomas. And we're just going to say he's one to watch out for. We've said it before, but yeah, in terms of some athletes to look out for, he is definitely yeah. up there. But yeah, in terms of another athlete to look out for that maybe I guess not as well known, coached by Trevor Painter. So part of that Keely Hodgkinson group with Jenny Meadows as well.
She was an OG, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, as you'll find out.
Yeah, and yeah, she mentioned to us that Ava Lloyd has trained with that group since she was 12 years old, 19-year-old, 2:03 for the 800 and 4:12 in a 15 she has run. So some fabulous personal bests, and she's heading to Peru for the World Juniors. So great to catch up with her, mate, wasn't it? And I think some important kind of lessons for junior athletes out there. in terms of progression, but also just a kind of a unique case being in a world-class environment already, rather than trying to kind of go and find that world-class environment.
I think, yeah, that's it's like a really good takeaway is she's in a very unique position where, you know, a lot of athletes her age, 19, 20, you know, that sort of age, they're looking for that next step. Where do they go? Typically, you just go off to university, whether that's in the UK, you go to Loughborough, Birmingham, wherever, or you go off to America, right? And you just hopefully you get quick enough after that that, yeah, maybe you can justify getting a part-time job and trying to turn pro, etc. But, you know, she's going to go to university in Manchester, stay local. I think as an athlete, it doesn't get more exciting than knowing that the setup you currently have as a junior is good enough to take you all the way to the top, to, and not just the top, to like an Olympic champion top.
Yeah.
You know, whether she'll do that, we don't know, but I think that's quite a unique position. I can't imagine there's too many youngsters out there that are in that position. I think really good to get her perspective on like the pressures and how the group's changed, because she was there before Keely and people like that, and how she's kind of coped with that. So, and I think, you know, she's done a phenomenal job, and I think obviously Trevor and Jenny are just very good at, really, really good at managing their athletes and working on their mentality and mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll let Ava do the talking, obviously. So thanks for listening to us. Enjoy this episode, and we'll catch you very soon.
Okay, firstly, Ava, thanks for coming on the podcast. Welcome. How are you, first of all?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for having me. Yeah, kind of in the middle of all the preparation. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, good stuff. And obviously, for those of you listening, maybe preparations for World Juniors that are in Peru 2 weeks away, is that right?
Yeah. So we actually fly in less than a week. So I haven't got long left with like my coach back here. So it's kind of all in, prepping.
Gonna say, how's packing going?
not good at all. I'm getting shouted out quite a lot, but I have a few days yet, so I think everyone in the house needs to calm down. But
good stuff. What is the actually management in obviously British Athletics taking a relatively small team to World Juniors, isn't it? It always is though, because the standards are so high. But do you have like a mini holding camp, like quite a bit of a time difference there as well?
Yeah, well, I think I know of a few teams who are actually flying out like now-ish to get acclimatized, because it is actually a 6-hour time difference. They're 6 hours behind, but we're not actually flying until next Friday. So we get there Saturday morning, like some ridiculous time, like 4 a.m. or something. So then I only have like 3 full days to kind of recover before my race, not including the Saturday. So it's quite a quick turnaround, and I'm lucky I'm not on the Tuesday.
Mm. Yeah, will you start kind of moving your time zone over before you leave? Is that part of the plan? Do you go into that much depth, you know?
I have actually thought about it, although I think everyone else in my family is probably going to hate me. But I think sometimes, you know, in the summer holidays, I do tend to wake up a little bit earlier. So I think... yeah, I don't need to make a lot of adjustment, but probably some in the next few days, especially.
It's good. And look, you'll be running the 1500. Interestingly, what's the last? It's been a kind of quiet month for everyone else who wasn't at the Olympics, hasn't it? Like there hasn't been too many races going on, and you know, obviously you won English champs, and you booked your spot, you nailed your qualifying standard as well. So what has this last month looked like? I mean, we're just talking off air then about, did you get out to Paris or not to see the group?
Yeah, it's been a lot quieter than the previous few months. I think at the beginning of the season, I was racing quite a lot because I am relatively new to the 15. So we really wanted to get a few races under my belt and obviously nail the qualifier. So I think it was really important to have a bit of downtime and time off racing in between, especially while most of the team is out in Paris. It's a bit tricky to kind of balance everything and like keep in contact with them when they're so busy. So it's been quite nice just to chill and train hard. I did actually do BMC, because it was actually really hard to find races, even if I wanted to do them. So I wanted to do like a fast one after securing my spot, just to get used to, you know, going out from the gun again, which didn't do quite as well as I was meant to, but it was a decent time. Can't really complain.
Yeah. You mentioned kind of being a bit newer to the 1500. Is that something that you see yourself, I guess, progressing into, or is it going to be 800 and 1500 for the next few years?
I always like to keep a balance. I think I've definitely been swayed this year more towards the 15, especially because even though I started to specialise in them last year, I think I was running them off 800 metre training. And then so this year I've done a lot more specific 15 stuff, and the difference has been crazy. I've been like, oh my God, this is just a whole kind of ball game. So I was thinking, oh, 100% 15 all the way. But then I did drop down to do 2.8s, and it was actually pretty nice just having to run 2 laps. I did quite enjoy that quite a lot. So I don't think I'll be letting go of dabbling in a bit of both for a good few years.
We got a purist here. We got, you know, Georgia Bell is proving that, you know, you can do the 8 to 15 and you don't have to just specialize in one. But look, you know, after you nailed the standard, it's like you said, you had a few quick early season, well, mid-season races. Preparing for championships, I'm intrigued, you know, does training change? Do those workouts change? Like, do you have to start thinking about closing hard, or like you said, going off particularly hard? Typically, World Juniors is always quite daunting, the way, you know, those East Africans will just blitz the first lap at World Juniors.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually gone into kind of a build block at the moment. So all of the longer stuff that I thought I'd left behind in camp in Poch, they've all kind of come back into play. So I'm like, Trevor, this is a bit of, I can't believe you're doing this to me, and you're away in Paris and I've got to do this. So that's been a bit of a shock to the system, but it's making sure like my tank's topped up to go with those fast paces and my endurance is still there. We actually incorporate a lot of kind of speed change work into our training normally, so it's not like I suddenly have to start doing that. So we will have a lot of sessions where we'll have like the last 200 in the rep we have to pick up, so that's quite a normal thing that's built in continuously throughout the year by Trevor, which is, so it hasn't really been big changes. I think now I'll definitely start, I've started to wind down slightly on the intensity to just to make sure I freshen up for the champs.
Hey, you mentioned topping up some of that longer stuff. What does that look like specifically for someone kind of at your stage in career? Like, what sort of volume are you doing kind of in the winter? And what does that look like kind of in terms of reps and things like that as well?
Yeah, so like I said, I've actually gone up quite a bit this year compared to what I used to do. I think my mileage last year must have been, in the winter, maybe I was hitting about 40 miles a week as my max. And then in the summer, it was like 25. Whereas this year, some of my winter blocks, I was reaching like 45 to 50, which is quite a lot for me. I was struggling out there. It was not enjoyable sometimes. And now at the minute, I think it's about, you'll probably be at about 35, maybe hitting 40, 45 on the very rare occasion in the summer. But I've had a lot more of, we do like, it's called like a gears run. And it's kind of like a progressive tempo for 50, 60 minutes straight in like a triangle, or it can be all over the place. It doesn't necessarily have to be a triangle. That is very grueling. So I put a lot of my endurance down to those runs, because if you can get through them, then you're going to run well. We also have like a stadium loop. So we do like it's like a 1K loop around the stadium, and we do a lot of reps around there, and they're like 1K and up. Sometimes it's like 8 minute reps, and you can tell when we all have that kind of session, because everyone turns up to training, you know, not exactly bubbly and raring to go. So
it's actually fascinating hearing you say about the, you know, one, the longer reps, but two, that kind of 60, 50 minute kind of hard consistent run. Because I think, you know, mileage wise, you know, I guess Trevor's group and the group you're in, everyone sees him as quite low mileage, but clearly they still do, you know, endurance work, obviously not across the whole week, but that's a big, you know, that sounds like quite a big strong session, which, like you said, you've clearly had a lot of success from. And put, do you put kind of your performance in the way you've been able to hold your performance throughout the whole summer kind of down to those sorts of workouts?
Yeah, I think we are kind of known for like the lactic sessions, and I've speaking to people from other groups, when I tell them some of their sessions, like, oh my god, what do you mean you get like 5 minutes or even 8 minutes recovery between reps and track sessions? I think they think we're a bit crazy sometimes, but I think there definitely has been a change in the training this year for me personally, and I think I was quite shocked by how much of an effect I actually felt that in my ability over the 15. Because even some, I've been doing longer track sessions, like I'd never ran above 600 meters as a rep on the track. And then, you know, in January, I was made to do, I think, 1200 meters, and it almost killed me. I definitely say that's had such an effect on kind of my 15 racing. It's just, I've seen like an improvement I could never have expected.
I think psychologically as well, like you kind of, you're now comfortable with kind of racing a 15 hard from the get-go when you're kind of doing those longer hard intervals, right?
Yeah, so I was always quite good at the more endurance stuff, but like I said, our endurance work, we do the gears run down like a canal or a trail, or we do 1k reps or longer, we do it around like a road staging loop. We'd never do those long reps on a track. So I think also doing the longer stuff on the track, it's helped me a lot mentally to kind of keep focus, especially in that third lap in the 15. So that's usually where it all went wrong for me. But I've managed to up my game with it this year.
Yeah. And speaking about that kind of the mental health, I guess, what's it like having ladies like Keely, like Georgia Bell, in your group doing the training, I presume quite similar training to yourself? How much of a, I guess, boost does that give you kind of in trusting your training?
Well, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes it's pretty terrible. You know, if you're having a bad session in that group, you're pretty far out the back. But then you just have to remind yourself like the caliber of the kind of girls that you're running with. And you're like, oh, okay, it's not actually that terrible. It's just, you know, sometimes you can get dropped pretty badly. But especially after, for example, like Georgia and Sarah came back from Paris, and I think there was a session and I must have been, it was on the track. I can't remember what reps were doing. I was pretty far behind. And then I'm like, even if I'm 10 seconds behind, that's still like 4:06 kind of. And I'm not saying I'm in that shape, but that's what I had to, you know, you have to kind of put it in perspective, the kind of people you are training with. And then the plan that I'm doing, all the sessions, like look what it can evolve into, you know, if you put that work in and you like carry on trusting all the training and then trusting Trevor and Jenny's guidance. You know, it's nice to see the progression like on paper and like in front of you and the evidence that it does work.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic, certainly for someone like yourself. Do you feel like you have an expectation to deliver, to kind of be the level you are at, just because of being associated with that group? Like, is there pressures about being in the group and kind of delivering?
I've never really felt it, to be honest, because I think I was kind of in the group before it all kicked off. I think I've kind of, because I've seen everyone kind of come into the group, because I was trained by Trevor before Keely was.
You're an OG.
Yeah, since like 2017. So it's been really kind of, obviously it's been really nice seeing them all come in. But I think the only thing it does is bring kind of confidence. I've never felt like a pressure or anything to perform just because I'm in the same training group as those guys, or because I'm trained by Trevor and Jen. If anything, it's really like uplifting to kind of see the results that they're pumping out, and then, you know, really believe in what I can do.
And how is it that you got into the group in the first place? Is it right that your mum was coached by Trevor before?
No, she wasn't coached by him. She was in the same group with him.
Okay.
They were both in like Wigan Harriers together. So when I started, I think it was high school, so I was year seven. It was the beginning of 2017. And I think I won like a cross country race in PE or something. And I was kind of winding down. So I never did any kind of CV sports before that. I did like gymnastics and dancing. So I won this race. And I was like, oh, this is quite nice. I kind of want to join a club. And then my mum was like, oh, well, I know exactly who to call. And I think she actually had to beg Trevor to like let me join in one session a week. So I was like, I'm not taking on a 12-year-old. So gradually I was like one session a week in 2017, and then kind of I built on that, obviously got more and more attached to the group. Mm. And it's completely changed since I started. I think there's only one other sprinter, Ashley Nemitz, who was in the group when I started, who's still here now. I've never had another coach apart from Trevor.
It's actually so cool, because we didn't realize this at all, and I don't think many people would have realized this. Your relationship with Trevor and Jenny, like, obviously it would have changed over time, you know, from when you're 12, 13 year old to what you are now, 19 years of age. But have they changed at all? Obviously there's been a lot of change who's come and gone from the group, but you know, talk about how that relationship's developed.
Yeah, so I think at first, obviously Trevor, it was kind of like, oh, I'm taking on this kid. It's kind of, my group's like pretty serious. And then when I actually started, Jenny was still training as like for pacemaking duties. Mm-hmm. So she was still very much like an active member of the group at that time. And I think it's been really nice because they've seen my development throughout my entire career in the sport so far. And I think I've, you know, learned to really trust them, and I can really kind of work with them very well and communicate everything. You know, so I'm like, Trevor, I think that might be a little bit too much for me. Or very good at like, yeah, working out what's best for me, really. Because we tried so many different things over the years. And then the dynamic with Jenny has definitely changed a lot, because she went from kind of an active member in the group, and then she took a bit of, she wasn't really involved as much. She did a lot of commentating, but now the past year or so, she's become a lot more heavily involved with the group. And I think that's just made a huge change, having them as kind of like a team together. You know, you turn up to training and it's both of them, and Trevor's so good with the technical aspects and stuff and the plan, and I can really talk to him about that. And then Jenny kind of brings in the experience and having lived through all of that herself, so together they make a really good pair. And yeah, like I said, I really trust them, and because I've basically grown up with them since I started running.
Mm. Yeah, and obviously clearly working so far, and I'm sure you'll kind of have success with that group for many years to come. But let's talk about the setup. Like, obviously you mentioned you've got a number of athletes in the group. Do you all kind of train together at the same time? How many different sessions are going on at each time? You mentioned obviously Trevor and Jenny were both away. Like, who's looking after the group when they're away in terms of kind of how it runs and things like that?
Yeah, so I honestly don't know how they do it sometimes, because we have like Gloria, who's a 100-meter sprinter, all the way up to kind of some 3K, 5K athletes. So sometimes, especially once we move into track season where everyone's trying to do like event-specific stuff, it can be a bit of carnage. And I don't even know how they manage that sometimes. Trevor's got about 3 stopwatches in his hand and you're like, oh my god, he's like running from left to right across the track. They do manage it very well though. If they know they've got a lot of sessions, they'll both come down. And then there's actually there's a guy called Darren Borthwick, who's Emily Borthwick, the high jumper. He's her dad, and he helps out a lot, and he's kind of like the assistant coach. So while they were off in Paris, he took on a lot of the sessions while we were back at home and made sure everyone was kind of still had the motivation up to come to training. And we'd still kind of come together and do it. I think a lot of the time it's the camps where we kind of really thrive as a group, because we have like a few international athletes, like Anne-Marie from Denmark, and then Georgia kind of comes, she does come quite often to train with us, but especially on camps, you know, she's there for every single session. So even though we do have kind of athletes who Trev and Jen kind of coach remotely, we do see them quite often, and everyone kind of, we always like to make an effort to come together as a group and train, because you can always tell like everyone has a better session when kind of everyone's there rather than just one or two.
Yeah, I'm sure. I reckon so many people can relate to that. I just think it must be so inspiring for someone like yourself to sort of, you're out on the track, you know, you're putting yourself through it. You look over and so's, you know, the Olympic champion, so's the Olympic bronze medalist. It must just be crazy. But I think something which stands out for me is like, especially with Trevor and Jenny in the group, and you might be able to talk on this a little bit, it's just like, you guys don't seem to have any limits on yourselves. And I think like Georgia Bell's kind of highlighted that this year, almost the way she's come into things is limitless. And you made a big jump this year as well. So, you know, at the start of the season, are you talking kind of goals with Trevor and Jenny? Are you going, I want to run X time? Or do you just kind of go, you know, I want to execute this amount of training and that will lead to a good time? Because I just feel like anyone who comes through that group just, seems to just have so much belief in themselves and just pushes themselves until they basically can't anymore, and whatever that is.
Yeah, so at the end of like every track season, we kind of, every kind of member does like an end of season review. So we go back over the season with Trevor and Jenny and like talk about what we think worked well, what we were a bit disappointed with, what we wanted to kind of, we wish we did a bit more, and what we want to take into the next season. And I think that kind of reflection, that really helps so much with the kind of attitude and building into the next season. And I think just seeing it, how like each kind of, every person in the group has in some way, you know, kind of broken through any kind of expectation that they originally thought. Like it started with Keely, arguably in 2021 when she won the silver, and then you kind of see it just replicated so often. And then because, you know, you're doing that training and you're there with those people on a daily basis, it kind of comes just a normal aspect that, you know, you shouldn't really think, oh well, this is the fastest I can run. And I think Trev and Jen, they do place a heavy importance on stats. So after every session, even if there's about five different sessions, they'll make sure that everyone knows the times that they ran in the session. And from that, you can kind of get the confidence and like you're in shape, rather than just being like, oh, I don't really know what I want, ran, I felt good. Whereas they're very good at being like, right, so you ran this time, like that is very indicative that you can run, you're in such and such shape if everything went perfectly well. So I think that's super, super important as well. But a lot of the time, a lot of people run faster than that anyway. Yeah.
No, it certainly seems that way. You know, you always seemed quite shocked, you know, how fast you guys can run. And is that something, has that ever worked, I guess, negatively, you know, when you get handed those splits and you know what they mean, has it ever kind of had a bit reverse psychology and you've walked away disappointed?
Yeah. So I think last year I was training really, really well. But I just couldn't see that replicated in kind of races. I just get really stressed, and it was more like the mental aspect. And it can be quite difficult when you're seeing all these times on paper and you're like, you know, that's indicative of a certain time and a certain shape, and you just can't seem to deliver that on the track. And it can be really hard. But I think that's a very like individual thing, and you have to kind of sometimes accept it and just like just keep going with it and kind of trust the entire process. So even though I probably would have liked to run faster this year, it's just meant I've taken more off my time last year, this year, when it has eventually paid off sometimes. So it can be difficult, but I think I'd argue that like the confidence from seeing all the stats can definitely like outweigh the negative side of it. And I've learned as well over the years, because this is the kind of process that I've been brought up kind of, I've been brought up like through the sport, looking at my stats and like, oh, this is what this means. I've become very good at like shutting it off. So mm-hmm. there was like a race prep session that I did before my first 800 in the season. And I was on my own because everyone else was doing like a 1K session outside the track, and it was raining, horrible weather. My stats must have been appalling, but I didn't even open the sheet at the point. So I was like, I'm very good at ignoring them when I know it sometimes as well.
Yeah, one thing we wanted to chat about as well, obviously kind of we mentioned already, like a junior athlete, 19 years of age, you're, I guess, top of your age group, but most people your age are trying to figure out how they make the step or the change perhaps to kind of get to that elite level. Being in the group you're in, I guess, do you feel like you have everything you need staying where you are to make it to the top, or do you have any plans in the future to kind of go elsewhere for a bit, come back? I'm not sure.
No, I don't think I'll be moving anytime soon, really. They call it like the pipeline, Trev and Jen. So they have like a pipeline of athletes, and you can't, it's just, like I said, you can just see the progression out in front of you. Whereas some coaches, if you're training really well, but you can't quite see how they'd take you to that next level and you'd make that jump with that training that you're doing. Whereas it's just out there for you to see, like anyone can see it with Trev and Jen. And I think that's really reassuring in itself, with even with the level that I'm at the minute. And like you said about the unexpectedness, you don't know, especially with the training that we're doing. Like, I didn't really expect to be in the shape that I'm in this year. So yeah, I think I'm going to uni in Manchester, because I didn't really want to move anywhere else. I didn't really want to leave the group, especially now that there's so many girls in it. And when you're training with them, it's just unreal, really. And I think I've gotten so much out of that this past year. I wouldn't really want to leave that behind me.
Oh, 100%. Actually, yeah, just talk about like the amount of high class, high caliber women in the group. And, you know, a lot of professional women might use kind of men to help pacemaking and stuff, but you guys really are just a core group of women, really, aren't you? And that must be quite powerful.
Yeah, it's really nice. Everyone can kind of just believes in each other, and everyone really gets along. And, you know, you can just see how everyone works together so much. Like Georgia and Sarah this year, they've both come on in like leaps and bounds, because in the camps, you know, they'd, especially in the long stuff, you just see them out front like battling, and it's just really cool to watch. We do have a few male athletes in the group.
No, yeah, you do, actually. Unless... Yeah, name them.
Yeah, so we have like Oscar Schofield. He's usually out front. But there's a few, like Charlie Hobson and Joe Riscara. I think they went out to Paris with some of the girls to train with them while they were out there, which was really nice. And then my younger brother, actually, he had a bet on with Keely this year. Because they're quite similar in training. So she said she'd give him 50 quid if she ran faster than what she did by the end of the season. And unfortunately, I think he's just missed out. So he ran 155.6 in Bury, I think. So yeah, second off. He wasn't too happy about that. He could have done with the money, he said. But so everyone does. It's a really nice dynamic. Everyone works really well together. Mm.
Yeah, wow. What an environment, eh, to be kind of growing up and having bets with the Olympic champ on who's going to run quicker that season. But look, Ava, it's been great to chat to you. But just before we finish, what are the goals then for World Juniors this season?
I think just not to have a repeat of last year. Last year for Jerusalem, I went in, had no expectations. My main goal was to make it. And then I got on the start line and I was totally overwhelmed and didn't believe that I could be competitive at all. Whereas this year, I just want to go and I want to believe that I can be competitive and mix it with the best girls in the world. And I want to be looked at as a competitor and know that I can be dangerous on that scene. And yeah, like you said, have no limits to what I can really achieve on a stage like that.
Has that just been, you know, has that confidence, that change in mindset since Jerusalem, has that happened through training, or you just kind of a lot of self-talk and a lot of confidence being built kind of on your mental side?
Definitely a bit of both. I think I had to work a lot on the mental side this year, and I think that's had so much effect on like my training as well, and they've both kind of gone hand in hand. And I just, every time I'd have a bad session, I just think back to my sit and no kick tactic in the final, where I just sat at the back, didn't do anything. I was just like, oh, I'm happy to be here. And then, so I was just like, I cannot have that happen again. And I think that's something that I've really taken through with me into this year, that I don't want to happen again.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Has those kind of, you working on your mentality, is that just you against you know, or is that, have you been working with a psychologist or anything like that? Because one of the big things I think is not enough younger athletes actually work on their mindset, because it's like this time in your life is just crucial, like you said, it being able to step up when you're 20, 21, 22. Having a good mindset now is crucial to that development.
Yeah, absolutely. I have started working with a psychologist this year, so I've had quite a few sessions throughout. It's not loads, it's maybe like once a month, if that, but I found that that's just been unbelievably helpful when it's become to my training, and especially competition, dealing with nerves and stress and like self-belief. It's just made a world of a difference. And then that paired with talking to Jenny a lot about it, about her own experiences, I think it's, I can't even say what. Well, obviously you can see the improvement that it's made, but yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah, well,
that's great to hear. And obviously we wish you all the best at Worlds, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh no, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.